How did a little barnacled boat touch so many lives of people from an ocean away and give hope and courage to two tsunami-vulnerable cities and bring together two different cultures who found out they had more in common than they thought? I'm Brenda Starr. This and more coming up on Through the Eyes of Women next. When a 9.0 magnitude earthquake in Japan triggered a tsunami in March of 2011, it killed around 20,000 people and devastated more than 300 miles of coastline. Over 5 million tons of debris was swept into the ocean. Most of that debris sunk. The rest was carried out to sea. A small fiberglass boat named Komome, Japanese for seagull, washed up on the shores of Crescent City, California. That boat was from Takata High School in Rikuzen, Takata. The journey home of that boat became a symbol of hope, and the kindness of strangers has inspired the bilingual children's book, The Extraordinary Voyage of Komome, A Tsunami Boat Comes Home. Joining me today are the authors and illustrator of this story about the Book of Hope, Lori Dangler, Amia Miller, and Amy Uweki. Welcome and thank you for being on Through the Eyes of Women. Let's start with a little intro. Lori Dangler, Professor Emeritus here at HSU in Geology. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Well, I'm going to start by introducing how I became aware of Rikuzen Takata and how this actual whole process began. I study tsunamis, and in late April and May of 2011, I was part of a post-tsunami survey reconnaissance team. We spent 10 days in the hardest hit areas of the Tohoku region, and the very last city I visited was Rikuzen Takata. And I was there for about half a day. I very quickly looked at things. I snapped 1,000 photographs and then was off to something else. I wrote a paper. But I was very interested in following the ongoing recovery process. And I became aware that Rikuzen Takata had a Facebook page. So one of the things I did as soon as I got back was liked the Rikuzen Takata Facebook page. And even though a lot of it was in Japanese, I kind of got a feeling for what was happening. So time passes. We get to April 2013. I get a call from the Del Norte County emergency manager who basically says, Lori, you've got to come up here and see this. And this was the boat. The boat that had washed ashore or had been found the previous evening and was now impounded in the sheriff's parking lot. So I, along with several colleagues, went up that morning, and it really was amazing. This little boat absolutely crawling with these long spaghetti-like barnacles. And so we spent that morning scraping away the barnacles and noticed the Japanese characters. I took lots and lots of photos. Dear friend and colleague here at the university, Kumi Watanabe Shock, who has translated materials in Japanese for me before, I immediately show her the photographs, and she says, oh, that's Takata High School in Rikuzen Takata. And I go, oh, I've been to Rikuzen Takata. I've actually taken a photograph of Takata High School. And about 2 days later, it occurred to me, oh, I like Rikuzen Takata on Facebook. So in the evening, I just post the link to the photographs. And that is the point where this story takes an amazing turn.
And we turn to Amia.
And that's where I come in. I'm Amia Miller, and my current role with the city of Rikuzen Takata is that of special advisor. But in April 2013, I was the director of global public relations for the city. And one of my responsibilities was to monitor the messages that come in on the city's Facebook page in foreign languages and respond, as well as post on the city's Facebook page in foreign languages, et cetera, et cetera. So I see this message, which at first glance is relatively random until you start looking at the photos, and then there's nothing random about this at all. I see the boat. I see the writing on the boat. It says Takata High School. There are quite a few Takata High Schools in Japan. It's a relatively common name, Takata. But I also saw the symbols for the inspection stickers and realized this had to be ours. But I'm not in a position to call it. So I call one of my colleagues, one of my friends who teaches at the Marine Sciences Division at Takata High School, and I say, I'm going to forward you these photos. Let me know. Just give me a call. So 5 minutes later, he calls back, what is going on? Where is this boat? This is ours. And so I write back to Lori, and that started this very intense and beautiful relationship, which has me here in the studio today.
And you co-authored this book?
I did. I wrote the Japanese portion.
And the illustrator?
That would be me, Amy Ueki. I was the last on board because I didn't enter the picture until the story had been written in both Japanese and English. And they were looking for an illustrator for this. And Kumi Watanabe Shock is also a dear friend of mine. She's everybody's dear friend. And she put Lori and I together. And when I read the story and I saw this Facebook video that had been made of the story and the journey of the boat to Crescent City and back to Japan, I was extremely moved. And I was also honored to be a part of the whole project. So I signed up and that's how I got on board.
So the project started as a discovery, and Laura, you went up to Crescent City to look at the discovery, and along with the boat that was found, what connections were made that finally brought in Del Norte's high school students?
Connections are everywhere. Certainly the Facebook connection, the connection with Amiya, but there was this group of high school students at Del Norte High that got it in their head that, oh, it'd be kind of a fun project to clean up the boat and send it back. And this is somewhat independent of Amiya's first reaction, which was, we want this boat back. And this group of high school students actually put together a very sweet little YouTube video. And I will mention that if you go to our website, humboldt.edu/kamome, K-A-M-O-M-E, you can actually see all of those. You can see the Facebook video. You can see the YouTube video that the students put together. And they were trying to raise money. And at that point, it was like, we really need to be communicating with Amiya, and also communicating with the relevant agencies in both the United States and in Japan.
This is a story that has a life force of its own. And I don't want to exaggerate the significance of these connections. I want to emphasize, because every step along the way, and I really do mean every step, people have stepped up. People, organizations, groups, schools, companies. Most people who stepped up didn't have to do this. And this is where the story and its own life force turns from one beautiful opening of a channel to another. On the back of the book, there are three Japanese endorsements, and the one on top is from Mayor Toba of Rikuzen Takata. And I said, you have two lines. Give me what you got in two lines. And he and I went back and forth, and he said, I can't write in two lines. But he says in Japanese, and this is the translation, this is a story that was born from many miracles. It's about bonds and it's about friendship. Please read this. And that's exactly what this is. It's one miracle after another, after another, after another. From these Del Norte High School students all the way up to both governments. The Ministry of Foreign Affairs in Japan is fully aware of this story. Her Excellency Caroline Kennedy, Ambassador to Japan, United States Ambassador to Japan, has a copy of this book. It just keeps going. And to have this opportunity to be here in Humboldt County, in Del Norte County this week, to keep talking to people, kids, adults, teenagers, I get to go back tomorrow, and on Tuesday, I'm going to go back to work, and I'm going to give a full report on what happened this week. And my colleagues at City Hall are just going to shake their heads and say, who are you people? Why do you keep doing this for us? But this is so necessary for them. And it's such a powerful message. This is about hope. This is about the best case scenario that could have come out of an incredibly tragic, horrific experience. And right now, hope matters to this community because there's really very little of it. And so that's why these miracles, some small, some not so small, this is a very significant story. And my hope, my job is to have conveyed that message here to your audience this week and to talk about, if I have a favor, it's that I ask you to buy it. Lori and Amy and I aren't getting rich off this book. Our retirement homes are not being built by this book. The money goes back into the cultural exchange, the educational exchange between the two high schools. And it's also about disaster preparedness teaching, earthquake and tsunami awareness, training for many, many groups of people. And being able to say to my colleagues, people are buying this. It's flying off the rack. This is good.
Tell me a little bit about the students, because we have students from two earthquake zones, two fishing towns, basically, that have a lot of similarities. Do you think that's what brought the intense passion that Del Norte students had for this boat?
No, because I don't think the Del Norte students knew anything about Nikuzen Takata in the beginning. I think over time, they grew to understand just how many similarities there are between these two communities. But I think this was one of those very basic level random acts of kindness that turned into the beautifully explosive scenario. No, I think this was a good deed. I think this was about kindness and goodness and being nice. And it just took on a life of its own from there.
And how important was it to have a remnant from the town?
Right. Nikuzen Takata has this unfortunate notoriety of hitting all the major data points in terms of loss. And it's also the only city in the entire 300-mile coastline where every resident of the city has lost someone. And so there are approximately 20,000 people in town. And to have everyone experiencing loss, whether it's an immediate family member, a relative, a colleague, friend, or neighbor, and most people having lost multiple friends, family members, this kind of grief is palpable. It's like humidity. You just feel it when you go into the city. But it's also so pervasive that it's chronic. And if it was lost, it's not coming back. That's the general sentiment. So for it to have not been lost, for it to have been found, adopted, taken care of, and then returned, this doesn't happen. This is one of those miracles. It's not supposed to take 2 years to cross an ocean. It's supposed to disappear. But it didn't. And all of these continual miracles, and that it's back, this is huge.
This little boat is one of now about 60 pieces of tsunami debris from the Japan tsunami that has been definitively identified. There have been thousands of reports of possible debris. And if you happen to go onto the main floor of the HSU library, you'll actually see a big chest full of possible tsunami debris items that we've been collecting over the past few years. But of these 60 items that had something on them that you could absolutely tie it back to Japan, Kamome is arguably the single most important. And the reason for that is that it belonged to a public entity. So all of the other items, I guess with the exception of the dock that beached in Oregon that had to be destroyed, belong to a private individual. And as a private item, it does not have that same community significance as Kamome. So here we have a boat that is not only public, it belongs to a high school. We have this group of high school students who have not a clue the sort of significance of what they're doing. This is a sort of afternoon project to get them outdoors. They're a very diverse group of students, from sophomores to seniors, to the senior class president, to students who are definitely not on the main academic path. This really interesting group that decides, oh, this sounds like a good idea.
This is your host, Brenda Starr, and you're listening to Through the Eyes of Women. My guests today are the authors and illustrator of a book of hope called The Extraordinary Voyage of Kamome, A Tsunami Boat Comes Home. It's a bilingual children's book, and it was illustrated by Amy Uweki. Amy is a mixed media artist from Arcata, and how did you get involved in the project, and what did you bring? Your illustrations are magnificent. I know we're on radio and you can't see them, but I believe you used a woodblock.
Well, that's the story that's I probably started, but it's actually, I have a French word faux in front of the woodblock, so it's really not woodblock at all, but that was the original intent. I do work in woodblock, and for this project, I thought, well, that would be perfect because of the much of my work is inspired by Japanese art, and certainly my style is much rougher. It's more probably in the line of German expressionist woodblocks or just very simple folk art from Japanese and Chinese woodblock artists. But I thought that would be a good way to connect the two cultures in that medium. But that was not a good idea because we didn't have very much time really to get this book on the shelves before the 5-year mark of the tsunami of March 11th. So I decided to go for that look, and I actually did it on the computer for the most part. I worked from my own sketches that were drawn from photos, a voluminous amount of photos that Lori provided me, and was able to use those as the base, and then created with a stylus and Photoshop.
Well, it certainly has the look of woodblock, so, you know.
Well, good. That was the whole idea.
I want to ask you about the cover of the book, where you have a number of people holding up the boat. What is the significance of the people that are holding up the boat?
Well, the people who are holding up the boat are the students from both Rikusen Takata and Crescent City. And I knew I wanted to use that image because that was one of the first images that came in my head of bridging this boat, really. It crossed the ocean, but it created this bridge between these two cultures, these two communities, and these high school students whose lives will be forever changed by this experience. So it's the boat that created that bridge. That's where the image came from.
So the boat took a couple years to get to the shores of Crescent City, and then it took a couple years to clean it up and return it home. Is that true?
Not that much time.
Okay.
So, and we do have a great timeline on our website, again, humboldt.edu/Kamome. The boat was found in April of 2013, and by October, the second, third week of October of 2013, it was back in Japan. And that story in itself is really, really remarkable because a chunk of debris, getting it into Japan, getting it down to a place where it can be shipped and getting it back over to Japan, that's not simple. And that, again, is really where everybody who needed to step up did. Amiya, you want to?
The backstory. I don't know that I've ever said this before. At first, I went to City Hall, and I went to the principal of Takata High School, and I said, we want this boat back. And they said, oh, no, we don't. And I said, oh, yes, we do. There's no place to put it in town. The high school at that point was completely destroyed. They were in a temporary facility. City Hall was destroyed. City Hall's in a temporary facility. The museums were destroyed. The museums are in a temporary facility. Where are we supposed to put the boat? And so it took a while to convince City Hall and the high school that this boat is one of those we can't make this up good stories. And it needs to serve as a bridge, as Lori said, as a symbol of hope, as a tangible physical piece of evidence so that we can continue telling the story. And I said, fine, I'll find a place to put it. And I knew I could count on certain people in the city to call in favors and go to bat for me, and I would certainly go to bat for the boat. But that process was a small miracle. That this Japanese shipping magnate came out of the blue and said, we'll ship it back for you, free of charge. We'll ship it up from the port to the high school, free of charge. That's a small miracle, because that just doesn't happen in Japan. That kind of corporate CSR is still very much, corporate social responsibility is a very new concept in Japan. It's much easier to pay out in a donation than it is to do something very, this is unorthodox. That Recology, a company in Crescent City, shipped it from Crescent City to the port of San Francisco. I mean, one case after another, after another, after another. This story just, it breaks new ground. And it's all because people want to be a part of the story, of the symbol of hope, of, again, goodness and kindness and the consequences of our actions. And I want to change subjects very briefly. I think this message is of particular importance to us right now because of what's happening in our world. Not just natural disasters. There are things that are out of our control. And most things that happen on a big scale are out of our control. And it's easy to focus on the negative, and it's easy to focus on the tragedy. And part of my job is to focus on the hope, is to focus on the goodness of what we as humanity have to offer each other. And I think that message, more than anything, is what I want this book to be about, especially for kids. Yes, you can stay home and play your computer games, or you can go out and do something nice for someone else. And wouldn't it be nice if more of us did the latter? So, I want to plug. Let's be nice to each other.
Yes, and this inanimate object, so to speak, this boat, comes across and then gets filled with hope.
Yes.
The hull is filled with hope.
Yes.
Speak about that filling of hope as this story unfolded to you.
The Rikuzen Takata High School students are not a demographic that would normally have access to cross-cultural experiences. This is a very small, not particularly well-educated, not particularly financially solvent, stable, and certainly the disaster did nothing to help this community. So to give these kids, Amy said earlier, we're changing lives. Absolutely, we're changing lives. We are having a huge impact by bringing these kids over to the United States, by bringing Del Norte High School kids over to Rikuzen Takata. This kind of throwing teenagers together and saying, get to know each other. And they do, because teenagers are like that. The adults just stand back and watch in awe. And there are hugs and tears, and we don't want to leave you. And the title of the book in Japanese is Let's Be Friends Forever. And that's the last line of the book. And I chose that particularly because it has that significance of we're committed. Out of goodness, out of kindness, we are committed. And that's what hope lies in. This boat, that's where this all connects together.
Let's be friends together. What's been the public reaction to the book as you've gone on tour now?
Amazing, extraordinary. Adults, children, organizations, agencies. This is a community builder. It's a story about community, and the community, both here on the North Coast and in Japan, has really risen to the occasion. I really want to thank our printer, Bug Press. Amy went over to Bug Press with her ideas.
Well, I've been going to Bug Press for almost 30 years now, I guess, and the owner, Robert Arena, is a wonderful person, and I admire his craftsmanship to the nth degree. He really knows what he's doing. He wanted this project to happen. He believed in it, and so they really did an incredible job. It turned out beautifully, so, and I knew it would because they do wonderful work.
And not only that, 5 weeks later, we have these books. We wanted a publisher. We've never written a book before. We had had some conversations with some publishers, but it was pretty clear that going the route of an established commercial publisher was going to be difficult. It was going to take much longer than we wanted. We really wanted this to be out by the 5-year marker after the tsunami. We also really wanted control. And so it was really looking like we were going to need to self-publish. I was having a conversation with the president of the university, Lisa Rosbacher, who is a geologist and I consider a friend. And I mentioned this project and, you know, how we were trying to figure out how to publish it. And she said, oh, Cyril Oberlander in the library is thinking about starting a press. You should go talk to him. So I go and talk to Cyril. And he says, oh, great. We'll make this our inaugural publication, even though it was not the sort of book that they were really looking to publish. They're really looking at digital media. We give him a book that is a book. It's a physical book. And he absolutely embraced it. This is what this book does.
I also want to talk about the kids' reaction, though, because it's priceless. And we just had another reading at a local elementary school. And one of the little girls, as Lori and I are reading it, I read the Japanese, she reads the English. She's giving me thumbs up. And it's a very private thumbs up, sort of this, it's a secret just between the two of us. But I'm telling you, I like the book. And that has happened over and over and over.
Watching the reaction of children, we wrote this. We thought we were writing it for children. But we've never written a children's book before, and I think we probably have adult sensibilities. And I wasn't really sure how it was going to be received by children. Well, when we were reading in Del Norte schools, it was absolutely wonderful. Because first, you know, they're being polite, they enjoy it when people come in to read. And then they hear Crescent City. And there's this sort of little look of puzzlement. And then this recognition that it's our Crescent City. And then they see the illustration with the high school and the big DN on the high school. My grandmother works there. My brother went to school there. It was just wonderful to see their recognition that they're in a book. This is a beautiful book. It looks like it looks better than a lot of the books on their bookshelves. It's a real book, and they are in it.
Well, you talked about there's not going to be a lot of profit from this book, but I think the profit from this book is the heartwork. The profit from this book is the fact that both children and adults alike get to see the artistry, the courage, the strength, and most importantly, the kindness that this story brings. I want to thank you all for being on Through the Eyes of Women and sharing this incredible tale with an incredible book called The Extraordinary Voyage of Kamome, A Tsunami Boat Comes Home. You've been listening to Through the Eyes of Women. I've been your host, Brenda Starr, and I've been speaking with Lori Dengler, Amy Uweki, and Amia Miller, the authors and the illustrator of The Extraordinary Voyage of Kamome, A Tsunami Boat Comes Home. It's a bilingual children's book. For more information about it, you can go to humboldt.edu/Kamome, K-A-M-O-M-E, or follow them on Facebook, searching for Kamome Book. Through the Eyes of Women is produced for KHSU, located at Humboldt State University. Thanks to today's engineer, Catherine Virgin, and to our entire production team. You can listen to the show again anytime in Through the Eyes of Women's permanent blog archives. Visit our blog at khsuwomen.com. Join us again next Monday at 1:30 right here on KHSU.